This is Behind the Pixels.
On the other end of a Skype call, I have Philippa Ratcliffe. Philippa, hello, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Roger.
Now, I'm just going to read from your bio, because you have the most amazing amazing bio on Twitter. PR, social media and broadcast communications consultant, cheese lover, Jaffa cake and whelk hater. I'm not surprised, that's a dreadful combination. And you have two other aliases. So, goodness me, let's talk, I think, a little bit first about the first bit, the broadcast communications consultant. What is it you do, Philippa?
Well, at the moment, it's, you know, I'm doing far more PR at the moment. But on the broadcast side, over the last few years, because of my background in radio, over the years, just been asked, you know, for support and advice, and with people setting up radio stations and broadcasting online. It's like with an awful lot of things, you fall into it, don't you? Instead, you know, I know when I was at school, I wasn't going, I'm going to be a PR and broadcast communications consultant. And it's just something that you fall into. So I do advise on things like setting up radio stations and broadcasting and interviewing and the like. So anything that really involves radio.
And there's two aspects of that that I find quite interesting. One is, I suppose, first of all, the connection with PR. Do you help your PR clients in terms of understanding the radio interview process and being interviewed for radio programs? Or in fact, do you encourage them to produce their own radio or audio content?
That totally depends on the client. Obviously, I give them advice on anything to do with any interviews, you know, any press interviews or anything else like that, which is quite handy because you can give them a pointer. So I'm sort of like sitting on both sides of the fence there, being able to advise them on what they're likely to be asked, and also, you know, and how they should respond. With some people, yes, it is, you know, encourage them to create their own audio. But like I say, it is all dependent on the client and what product or service or whatever it is that they provide. And, you know, and there are times when I will advise them just on basic radio advertising, because it is still quite a powerful medium. If you look at sonic branding, and if you can hit something like that on the head within the local community or your target market, then, you know, it's a good route to go down.
That's an interesting phrase that you use there, sonic branding. That's the first time I've actually ever heard that. What is that exactly?
When you're in the car, you'll hear an advert that will come on, and there will be a company that uses a signature tune or whatever, and that's associated with that brand. You'll hear, what about Intel? You know, when you hear that, on an advert on TV or anything else like that, that's sonic branding. And every time, if someone plays that, you will recognize it. So it's that hook in. Or if you remember the old BA ads, it's really interesting, actually, sonic branding. And it's really something worth looking into and just researching and reading up on, because it's amazing how our minds work and how we relate to things orally, obviously through the ear, not through the, but orally through the ear, and how we associate things. But it would be an interesting practice to do that, perhaps later on this evening when you're watching television, particularly with the adverts, and listen to how many of them use sonic branding and they've got that association with a particular piece of music.
That is remarkable. I suppose most people, again, and as you're talking, I'm running through them in my head. I suppose that little I'm loving it tune that McDonald's has. And so what is it in particular then that we as human beings warm to or connect with audio?
Well, particularly radio, it's something that you do by yourself. You know, we don't tend to listen to radio as a collective. So it is that one-on-one engagement. And if ever you listen to a radio presenter, they will talk about the listener, singular, and not plural. Because when you're broadcasting, you are talking to one person, and that is your listener. And it is, it's that engagement where that person is your friend. And that's why with radio, I think it we do get sucked into it. And even when they're using Zoo formats, so you've got several people broadcasting at the same time, you know, Chris Evans and Steve Wright, you know, these guys who have secondary presenters as such, that they make you feel part of it. You're not pushed aside. Some broadcasters can fail at it, and you can be listening to a show and you think they're having their own little party there, you know, and I'm not included. So it's really, it is really about engagement. And I know that, you know, we use that word engagement an awful lot in both broadcasting and within social media, because actually social media is a form of broadcasting.
Mm. Do you know what? You've just made my head explode. And I'll tell you why. Companies, corporations, individuals, businesses are always looking for that mechanism to make that one-on-one connection without actually having to, if you like, develop individual relationships. And this, I think, is probably why podcasting is predicted to be the next big thing by all the social media experts like Chris Brogan and what have you, is you record a podcast once, but as you say, the experience of the consumer, for lack of a better word, is a one-on-one relationship. And I'd never actually thought about that. I'd never realized that. And you've just completely clarified for me why podcasting and audio content is such an incredibly powerful thing. You are creating that one-on-one relationship, but it's scalable. You know, you're creating one-on-one relationships with an infinite audience if you want to. That's really, really interesting. So we're having a conversation, and immediately I'm thinking, oh, we should include you, the listener, into this conversation, and welcome to our conversation between Philippa and myself. Do you know what I mean? It actually shifts your thinking. That's quite interesting. Now you podcast yourself, don't you? You produce your own programs yourself.
Yes, I do. As you do as well, but I do a regular food program, and then I also just do the odd interview podcast or whatever that I think may be of interest to my audience, which would be, and I suppose my audience may well be on SoundCloud or Mixcloud or via my website or through Twitter, because these are all audiences. And there might be something that is of interest. So, you know, I'll record it. I might, you know, no one at all may listen to it. But it's out there, isn't it, for them, for anyone to enjoy. But, yeah, so I do a wee bit of podcasting and enjoy it very much.
One of the first podcasts I ever heard of yours was about street food. And you don't just sit in front of a microphone in a studio space or at home and talk. You actually go out and record material. And I'm quite interested in how you build up a story that way. How much planning goes into that? Or do you kind of go out and think, well, I'll see what I'll come across and then I'll cobble it all together later on?
Both, you know, it that can go either way. It depends what you're doing. Sometimes it will be completely planned, you know, who you want to speak to. If I'm producing an hour's show and I'm working on a particular theme or topic, then, you know, I will plan as to who I'm going to interview and who I'm going to speak to, and, you know, and where they're going to be positioned within that hour. But, you know, when you are going to outside events, that can just be the case of, you know, I'm going to go and grab interviews with as many interesting people as possible. And yeah, and then it's coming back and editing and going through it all and picking out the best bits and putting it together. So, but I think it's important to go out and go and speak to people. And also when you are dealing with particularly with food experiences, majority of the time people are in a restaurant or standing on the street or in a pub or a bar. So, you know, those are the, it is the ambience of the experience that they're, you know, that they're enjoying. So I do think that's important. But you're doing the same sort of thing here. You've gone out. I just happened to be on the end of a Skype call. So, you know, but it is, I think it is, it is key, particularly with things like food enjoyment, to hear the background noise, and it does lend itself greatly to the end result.
Well, I think you're right. I think context is very important. And I find that actually neatly leads me on to a question I wanted to ask you, because you do food. We'll talk about cheese in a minute, because I'm a massive cheese lover myself. But I'm also quite a visual person. I love audio, I love writing, and I'm very visual as well. And I do food photography and food videos. And the connection between the visual and food is a very easy one to make. I mean, everybody knows about food photography. Everybody sees food images all the time. If you're on Instagram, I'm convinced that half of Instagram is self-portraits and half of Instagram is photographs of food. There's very little in between, it seems to me. But I'm curious then, because an audio of food, that's an interesting thing, because yes, you're getting the ambient sound, but how do you get across the, I'd almost say, the flavor of the food? Or what is it that you're trying to do in an audio of something that most people would associate with a visual sense? Both visual and audio can't get across the taste of food, but most people would go, well, I can make the connection with a visual thing that I can see of food. But audio, how does that work? How do you overcome that? How do you get that richness into your audio?
Well, again, it depends what the subject matter is. But, you know, if you're interviewing a chef or if you're in a kitchen, there is nothing greater than hearing the chopping of the knives and something, you know, being thrown into the pan and sizzling in the pan. But obviously, you know, we are aware that this is audio, and as you know, with audio, you do have to be descriptive. So whilst those ambient and background noises are going on, you are doing a step-by-step. And sometimes it can feel a little bit like, not that you're talking to a child or teaching granny to suck eggs in any way, you know, with people that are listening, that are interested, but you are just going through the steps, because that will help them, that will give them their imagery. Because we all do it when we listen to anything, whatever it is, there is some kind of mental image. It goes back to, I remember as a child, you know, listening to the radio, and I used to love listening to Simon Bates. And, you know, and you build up, and at that time, you didn't really see the presenters or DJs that much, and a lot of them had a bit of a mystique about them, and I have to say I was slightly disappointed when I actually got to see him, see a picture of him. But you know, we create these images automatically, so it is a duty, really, if you are doing something about food, that to create that, you are very descriptive. And one of them is actually tasting the food whilst you're recording. And of course, all of our mothers would say, you know, Philippa, don't speak with your mouthful, you know, or don't do anything like that. But there is something about that sound, as long as you're not slurping. And then the thing is obviously to describe what you're tasting, what you're feeling, what, you know, what it does for you, because food is not just about taste. It's about the experience, about how it makes you feel.
I'm curious then that to do that well, to speak eloquently and off the cuff, what kind of tips would you have for people listening to us now, so that they might be able to become more confident about speaking and recording in that descriptive way? Are there any techniques that you've come across, or anything that you've done in the past, or are you just a natural talker that you're able to go, bang, here it is, lovely words just rolling out of my mouth?
No, I think it's like with anything. If you know what you're talking about, it's the same old thing. If you know, write about or talk about what you know about. And I think an awful lot of people will be surprised and amazed at how much they know about specific subject matters. you know, whether it's food or whether it's plumbing, you know, it's it is one of those things. So if you either have, you know, quite a lot of knowledge, that I think that it will just come naturally to anybody, or if you are you're genuinely interested in something that you don't know a lot about, and it will, you know, you will just ask the right questions. And of course the benefit is of being out on the road and recording something is you come back and you can edit it, and you can sound marvelous. You know, you could take out all the ums and ahs, which I'm sure there are plenty from me in here as well. But if there are specific words that you use repeatedly that sometimes we're not aware of when we go back and listen back to ourselves, and we say, oh my gosh, you know, I've said that 5 times in the last 10 minutes. But advice on people going out and doing it, I would just say, just go and do it. Just have confidence. The worst anyone can say, particularly when you're doing ad hoc interviews, like you say, when doing something like the Street Food Awards, where you're just pouncing on somebody, you know, excuse me, have you got a minute? The worst thing someone can say is no. So, and you'd be amazed the amount of people who do actually like to talk, and whether it's about themselves or whether it's about their general interest. So people will talk and talk, and they're the best ones that you can open with a question and they will just run with it. And another key thing is to, when you ask a question, is really listen. You know, you do listen, and you need to listen to their reply, and then have a secondary question off the back of the first one, because it just makes it, gives it more depth of conversation, and you just get far more out of it.
I think it is one of those things, as you say, it's as having a conversation. And if you can get into the mindset of having a conversation admittedly where you're letting the other person do as much of the talking as possible, then you're already in that kind of relaxed mode where you will have the attention and you will have the follow-up questions, I think. Let's just talk about your hatred first. I am really curious, what have Jaffa Cakes and Welks ever done to deserve your scorn?
Well, Jaffa Cakes are just wrong, aren't they, full stop. and I don't even believe there is an argument there. It's just one of those things. I actually don't like the combination of chocolate and orange. That's a big no-no for me. And so with a Jaffa Cake, not only have you got chocolate and orange, but you've got that hideous spongy bit underneath it as well, and it just doesn't work in my eyes, and I just can't abide them. I just think they're all, I just, yeah, Jaffa Cakes, no.
and Welks, or is it shellfish in general?
Oh no, I love shellfish. I adore shellfish. You know, there's not a lot out there that I don't like or won't eat, but Welks just have nothing about them, do they? They're just chewy and rubbery. I mean, okay, you could possibly sauté them or do something a bit more interesting with them. But I think the last time I did the attempt of going, you know, here we are, Philip, have another go. You know, you might like it this time. And I was actually down at Rick Stein's in Cornwall, and we had this huge platter, as you do. Well, it'd be wrong not to, wouldn't it, to go somewhere like that and not have that. So, you know, you have this huge platter of all manner of crustaceans, and I had another go at a whelk, and it just, no, I think they just need to be used as missiles or something. I just, you know, they don't serve a purpose.
Moving on to happier things then. You and I clearly share a love of cheese. What is the greatest cheese in your opinion? And what is the, as a follow-up question, what cheese have we never heard of that we should have?
Oh gosh, that's the second question there. I'm not too sure whether I can fulfill your request on that. The best cheese, I think that's very difficult to say because of all the different types of cheeses. So, you know, you cannot say that a good blue cheese is superior over a fantastic soft sheep's cheese, because they all have They all have qualities in their own right. But, you know, I'm a huge fan of Wigmore cheese, which is a soft sheep's cheese, which is absolutely delicious. I do like some of the Spanish blues. And when it comes to hard cheeses, I do like Black Bomber, which is a very nice Welsh cheddar. It's very creamy, very soft, but quite a strong flavour, but not too overpowering. You see, I could talk to you all day about cheese. What cheese should we talk about next?
You could. There's a Monty Python game, I'm sure, which is based on the cheese shop, and you could probably name all the cheeses in that sketch. And holy cow, I'm looking at the time. We're running out of time here, Philippa. I cannot believe. Well, this just goes to show you get into a conversation. It's so interesting. Time flies. I call it dog time because suddenly everything accelerates by 7. Philippa, where can people find out about you if they want to connect with you and find out about all the goodness that you're doing?
Well, for anybody who's on Twitter and who isn't, my Twitter is @partroot. Don't even begin to ask where that name came from. That's a whole different show.
Where did the name come from, Philippa?
No, that is another show, which is PARTROOT. So you can find me on Twitter, and my website is also partroot.com. And if you look on Twitter, and if you go onto the website, you will find all the routes to all my other online presences, such as SoundCloud, Mixcloud, Audioboo, wherever I'm floating around and making an online footprint, you'll find it there. And also, as you said, I've got a couple of other aliases on Twitter, which is one is radio_Philippa, and the other one is PR Bulletproof, which is the PR company that I run alongside with my colleague Rosie.
Listen, Philippa, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Oh, it's been delightful. When can we do it again?
Behind the Pixels is produced by the Digital Storyteller.